Are we recording yet?
Yeah.
We are?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I am your fearless host, Jay Williams. Joining me is your much more cautious host, Robbie Halim.
Fact. Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening.
We were just talking about how I am not in the right space at all to do this podcast, and you look a few steps behind me.
Physical space or mental, emotional space?
I don't know.
I feel like we're in the right, correct physical space.
We're in the correct,
this is where the microphones are.
Right, right. But yeah, your energy level.
No. Well, my energy level is always in question.
That's true. So that means I have to bring the energy level. And so what often happens right before the podcast is we're just sitting here going, what are we going to do? What? And then I say, hey, are we recording? And Robbie says, yeah. And then I just start.
Correct.
And then I get to see the deer in headlights look on Robbie. And then we fly
by the seat of our pants.
Fly again, once again. That's a callback.
It is.
It's like episode 57.
No, dozens of episodes ago.
Idea.
So yeah, nobody's remembering that.
I have no idea. This is like episode 100 something.
I don't know. Remember when you had to say what number episode it was every time?
I know. Those are the good old days.
The good old days.
It just felt so good. It felt so right. There's been a clamoring of people, the teenagers clamoring, groundswell of teenagers who want me to begin sermons like a YouTube channel.
For example,
like, I can't even do it. Hey, it's your boy, Pastor Jay. Here's hitting you with another sermon. Before we get started, just want to remind you to smash that like button and hit subscribe and, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
That's pretty good.
And then, all right, let's get into it. Three things you need to know about the resurrection. One.
Boom.
Boom. and then sign off like that. Okay. But anyway, I'm not going to do that.
No?
I said,
that's probably for the
best. I said, thanks, but no thanks. If I was in youth ministry, if I was Christoph, I might do it just for funsies. Yeah.
It's your boy, Jay.
But if I did it here, everyone would just stare at me blankly because I don't know that our crew is like subscribing to
a YouTube crew.
No. But I don't know if those illustrations could fall more flat than the ones I used on Sunday, especially during the second service. So we ended up posting first service's message. So this was different that we had the two services again.
Yes.
And so it reminded me of two things. One, then you have to choose which one you want to post.
Yeah, that's hard.
That's no fun. And number two, remembering what it was like to recreate what happened in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of preachers, and I don't know where you are in this, but there are a lot of people who, the more they preach the message, the better it gets.
Hmm.
And I am the exact opposite.
Hmm.
Almost without fail, it is always better right out of the gate and then afterwards.
Well, yeah, that's really difficult because you so much of what you do is extemporaneous. So much of what you do is not, you know, is on the fly. And so to try to then reproduce that a second time, like then it's not on the fly. It's not just kind of naturally flowing out of you. You're trying
to remember.
It starts to feel contrived. You're starting to remember what you said. Like that's really hard.
So what I get from this is you think that I sounded really contrived. Like the sermon was contrived. That's what I get from this.
I should have anticipated
well, hey,
that and clarified.
That'll wrap it up. If you need help with any, if you have any questions.
Anybody who hits the back mail. 30 seconds button will be able to discern that I said, that's how you're feeling.
Oh, I don't remember that part. But yeah, so it was interesting. Like, so that's the little behind the scenes moment of what do you do when something falls flat? And I'm someone that feeds off of people. Like I pay attention to how they respond to things. And so when something doesn't land, I'm looking at them going, okay, well that I did not expect because all of my little illustrations and everything seemed to work really well at sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
And, but
they were unexpectedly energetic at 6:30.
Oh man, the sunrise service was so energetic because those are people who were already up. They've been up for a couple hours. Like that's probably true.
That's the irony, right? The 6:30 service is filled with people who have already been up for 2 hours, and the 9:30 service, like they just rolled out of bed
that's
20 minutes
so
before they arrived.
True, and normally in the 9:30. Now, I mean, normally our services are pretty energetic. Like our 9:30, our regular 9:30 right now is really energetic. So,
all the morning people though were already gone.
Yes,
2 hours previous.
Yeah, that's like their nap time. 9:30 is like their mid.
That's their mid-morning.
It's like your lunch time.
For
it's their lunch break. So anyway, but illustrations aside, I did have one critique from one of my children who said, "Hey, it was a great message, Dad. You didn't really talk about the resurrection." And I'm curious.
I don't know that that's a fair critique. I feel like the whole sermon centered around the resurrection. I don't know how often you used the word resurrection.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot. I didn't use it a lot.
That's maybe a fair critique, but...
And I didn't read the account of the resurrection.
That is also true.
I just referenced the resurrection.
Mm-hmm. I think that counts.
Does that count?
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't
Is there a quota of how often you need to mention?
Like with Christian music and how they have to... Right. Yeah. No, I just wondered. I wondered after when my child said that, I thought, huh, I wonder if other people felt like, oh, that didn't feel like an Easter service. Like that didn't feel like a Resurrection Sunday message.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, it's fine.
I feel like you hit the quota when you mentioned that the resurrection is the foundation of our faith, and without it, there's essentially no Christianity. I felt like that laid a firm resurrectional foundation for the rest of the sermon. So I got your back.
All right. Well, so anything that we need to deal with, or do we just point people back to the recording of the sermon and wrap this up?
Evidently the better of the two. So if you came to second service, evidently you should listen to it because
I know
you missed the good one. I don't necessarily agree with that, but we've talked before, that is the trick. People underestimate how tricky it is to preach two times in a row because we're not just reading notes verbatim. Mm. Like we are communicating with the people that are in the room. And so there's a different energy. There's different responses. Sometimes if you see several confused faces, then you feel inspired to restate what you just said in a more helpful way or provide a different illustration to bring some clarity. And so if you didn't see those confused faces in the previous service, you didn't do that. And so there is a difference. It's hard that when you're self-critiquing, trying to figure out, well, which one is better? I mean, that's pretty subjective. And the reality is like the Holy Spirit hopefully is active in that process and saying, well, this one was better for the 9:30 and this one was better for the 6:30. So
yes. Yeah. At the end of the day, who cares? So,
at the end of the day, God's word will not return void.
Right. People will be convicted. So there were things in that. I mean, there's always things that you wish you would have communicated differently, but I'm curious. So one of the things I was trying to get at that I wish I had more time to do was just the very practical nature of what does this look like to actually put sin to death and raise with Christ in the resurrection to identify him. You know, theologically, we understand that no one comes to the Father except through Jesus. And in that is his life, death, resurrection. Like we are identified with him. He abides in us. We abide in him. We take on the life of Christ. There's all of this imagery that points to these theological truths, that we exchange our sin for his righteousness, that we take on the righteousness of Christ. We are hidden in Christ. He is our refuge, all these different things. Through him, we have access to the throne of grace. Like there's, so we have a lot theologically, but I just find that it's such a challenge for people to live this out practically. Like, what does it actually look like? What's the difference? I know theologically what the difference is between trying to be a good person and then thinking Jesus just makes up the extra, 20% boost that I needed. Theologically, we can all listen to that and say, well, that's obviously not true. But practically, in living it out, I think we often live in that way. Like we don't live fully in that. So
would you agree that sometimes the most difficult part is just reminding ourselves or convincing someone else that we're expected to live in a different way? Like we can read, as you were reading through Galatians 2:20, I was struck by how easy it is to read that and think, right, that applies to the moment of my salvation. That moment that, I became crucified with Christ and now I live in him. And we view that as a past moment in time that I received salvation, rather than seeing that as Paul saying, that is your identity now and the means by which you are currently living your life. Does that make sense? Like the distinction of that's the expectation of I am living the crucified life, or I think you said the cruciform life right now. And the life that I am currently living, I am living empowered by the resurrected Jesus. To me, the first step is acknowledging I'm actually expected to live in that way, rather than just seeing that as, right, died with Christ, made alive with Christ. That's what happens when I commit myself to Christ and pray the prayer and become a Christian. And then, like, that point's done. Galatians 2:20 is now in the past, and now we move on.
I would say, I mean, yes, for some people, I think it's the classic gospel is the third way. You know, Keller talks about that, and that we often find ourselves in a ditch, and we think the answer to that ditch is the opposite ditch. And so by that, I mean, you have a crew that does believe fully that we are supposed to be different, but they try to do that in their own strength. And so that's when you get into legalism and moralism and these different things. It's about your behavior. And then people push back against that ditch and say, well, no, it's not. Like, it's all grace. It's all like God has mercy on you. Like, it is all, we live by grace. Mm-hmm. And so therefore it doesn't matter what you do. And we fall into that ditch. And I think that crew ends up falling into the trap of in the heavy emphasis of that we are saved by grace, and that once God has us and once we are adopted into his family and that he will not let us go, in the heavy emphasis of that, people have concluded, well, then it doesn't matter what my life looks like from here on out because that ticket was punched. And then again, you have the pushback to that saying, no, it really does matter. We're called to be holy as he is holy. And then that ends up becoming defined by this list of rules and list of behaviors. And it becomes this heavy yoke that gets put on.
Yeah.
But the gospel, well, what Paul is talking about there in Galatians 2:20 is just a completely different way. It's a third way in that where it's actually it's claiming what Jesus said when he says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. It's believing that, yes, I am taking on the yoke of Christ. I am I am obeying. He talks all the time about obey my commandments. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. They will know that, like, he even says, his love, like there's even passages that it makes it feel like his love is dependent on us keeping his commandments. Yes. But it's the idea, like in John 15, but the idea there is that, like, it's flowing out of that. Like, you know you are loved, you know you are mine because you are being formed and shaped. And so it's both and. It is that, yes, we are, our lives should look different. And that new life should actually be a life of freedom. And it's actually, it's freedom. It's not this moralistic kind of, you know, try to just make myself do the right things. And then what that usually turns into is make sure everybody else is doing all the right things.
Right.
It's this living in power and in freedom. And that's the piece that I just feel like both ditches miss that. One's trying to live this life in their own strength, trying to prove to God I can do it. And the other side is just ditching that life altogether and just running
because
away.
Because it doesn't feel like freedom. It feels like an oppressive pile of rules and regulations and restrictions.
Right. And God's not about that. And so therefore, trying to like lay hold to that. So I thought maybe it'd be good for us here just to talk a couple of minutes about what does that look like practically then? What does it look like? And maybe look at some of these situations and then think, okay, well, what does it look like in the one ditch and what does it look like in the other ditch? And then what does it actually look like to put sin to death and to walk in the power of the resurrection?
I mean, you touched on this idea in the sermon, having to consider whether or not we can have just a piece of the resurrection,
right,
or whether or not we are living fully in the resurrection life. Like, can we just have just a little bit, like just enough of the benefit that I get what I need out of that, but it doesn't really like change anything or complicate my life. And we can't do that. Like, so in that sense, it is rather binary. It's all or nothing. So there is no third way in that sense. There's no compromise. That's the Jesus is you're serving one master or another. Like, you're not like a little bit following me, but mostly following someone else. And I'm cool with that. As long as I have a little bit of you, that's cool. Like, it's all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength. And so this idea of I can have just a little bit of resurrection life, just enough to benefit, I feel like makes it worse.
Yeah, it does. Well, that's what I would say would be kind of the first step, is to realize it is an all or nothing proposition. So one illustration is popping in my head. We'll see if it works. Is if I presented you with an investment opportunity, and said, you know, hey, there's huge returns on this investment, and if you believed me and thought, yeah, that does look like it, and I'm saying like there's guaranteed this is going to be a big return, you still are going to, you probably would look at it and say, all right, well, I'll take some of this money, and I'll even take half of my savings account or whatever and give that to you, because I think it's worth a lot. But if I said, yeah, but you don't get any benefit unless you have to clear out all your bank accounts. You got to liquidate everything. You got to sell your house. You got to take everything. You won't get any of the return on this unless you put everything into it. And that is a totally different type of feeling.
Hmm.
You know, it's the treasure hidden in a field that the guy goes and sells everything he has because he has to have that field. What's in that field is more valuable than everything he has.
Yeah.
It's not worth keeping any of his stuff. And it's when Paul says, I suffer the loss of all things. When Jesus says, you cannot serve two masters. This idea that it is all or nothing. You don't get to, if you try to hold anything back, then like you said, it's actually worse. You know, and if people say, well, how could that possibly be worse? How could a little bit of God be worse than none? Well, you know, Peter says, it would have been better if you hadn't even heard than to have heard the word of life and to taste that and to turn back. So I don't know. That is a little bit of a mystery. But there's the illustration a lot of times people use of being inoculated to something, like, you know, if anybody has ever heard of a vaccine or anything, if you've ever had any experience with any of that. But there is this idea that you get enough. There's a type of vaccine that you get enough of the virus to make you immune to it, but not enough that it affects you. And that's, unfortunately, you know, that's a common thing in the American church, that people get enough of it. And so they think, okay, well, as long as I believe in my mind, I believe that Jesus is real, and I believe that he rose from the dead, I believe he forgives me for my sins. And then I basically just go and live my life. And that is a dangerous place to be. And it's a enslaving place to be, because then you just end up in this like no man's land of not really serving Christ and trying to live for yourself. But then what ends up happening, I mean, most of the time when people are in that situation, they pursue their own selfish desires, but with a lot of guilt.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. The two ditches that I was picturing are, I have just enough Jesus to either feel super arrogant about it and judgmental toward others, or just enough to feel self-critique and shame for not being what I think he would want me to be. So I have just enough Jesus to feed the worst parts, but not enough to actually heal my brokenness, kill my sin, and experience the abundant life that comes from walking in the fullness of the full surrender to what it is that he's actually offering us.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's give an example of that. Cause we talked briefly about an example before the podcast, and I thought it actually ended up being a good one.
I found it extremely helpful.
Well, what people need to know is I was just processing the whole thing and was throwing out like 28 examples, and Robbie's just staring at me blankly. And then all of a sudden I hit on one. He's like, oh, that one. Oh, okay, good. So one out of 28 ain't bad.
No, it's good.
So imagine a scenario where somebody says something to you and something offensive to you. Maybe they get upset with you. Maybe they start, you know, getting angry at you. It could be a spouse, could be a coworker, could be somebody, some could be a stranger, could be at your kid's baseball game, could be anything. But if they're saying unfair things to you, they're being critical, they are getting angry with you, there's a moment of choice. There's a moment of decision in that what my flesh wants to do. I mean, I think all of us have been in the situation where what my flesh wants to do is put that person in their place. I want to say this harsh thing back to them. I want to show them how, well, you're not seeing that right. Like, I'm the one seeing this correctly, and you are actually the bad guy in this scenario, or you're the one being unreasonable, or you're the one that doesn't understand what's going on. It could be an argument over like political stuff that's going on, and so I want you to be put in your place. That's the way of the flesh. The way of the spirit would be things like turning the other cheek, seeking to live at peace with everyone, as much as it depends upon you, loving your enemies, praying for those who persecute you. So there's a way of seeking understanding of the person and sympathizing and having compassion in whatever they're upset about or their pain. The way that we often do that in a part way is like, well, there's the total flesh way that we would all say, like, so if we just like let them have it, said all the horrible things, that's just pure flesh. And we would all look at that. If we had an example of that, most of us who've been in the church for a while, we go, that's not the best. But there's a partial way of trying to experience the partial life, which being, I know I'm not supposed to just scream back at this person. I know I'm not supposed to just criticize them or insult them or anything like that. So I'm gonna not do that. I'm gonna bite my tongue and I'm gonna hold on to it. What happens in that? Like that, I only do that as long as, number one, either as long as it works. Because I don't know how many times I had people saying like, I wanted to say this horrible thing to them, but I didn't. I bit my tongue, but then they just kept going.
Yeah.
And so it didn't fix it. So then I abandoned it.
So now I have to say now that
I have
horrible to, thing.
Right. Now I have to say it, you know. Or I just do it. And if they keep coming, like it just keeps boiling over. So like, it's kind of like when you have a pot that's boiling over and you turn down the heat a little bit, eventually, you know, if that heat is still raising it, it might calm down for a second, but it's going to just keep, you know, building up. Yeah. But living in the resurrection would mean I'm actually choosing the way of Jesus. I'm dying to that. Like my flesh that wants to put that person in my place, I'm actually dying to it. I'm not muting it. I'm not calming it down. I'm not tempering it. I'm actually dying to it. I'm killing it off. Like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want what Jesus has for me. I want peace. I want compassion. I want mercy. I want kindness. I want understanding. I actually want those things. Like, I'm going to live, and that's living with Christ and the power of the resurrection. And a lot of times what that looks like is just, okay, God, I know this is what I want. I want to want peace. Like, I may not like fully want, but I'm like, okay, I want to kill this, like kill this desire in me to put them in their place. I'm not just putting it off to the side. I want it dead and I want peace. And what happens in those situations, I think a lot of us have had circumstances, if you've ever had that situation where then when I do that and I shift to that and I'm actually then walking in the newness of Christ, it doesn't matter what they do to me, I'm still at peace. Like, I just keep, actually, I've been in those situations. I've been in situations where I bit my tongue and it's just like, I'm just trying to, I still want that person to get put in their place, but I know I'm not supposed to be the one to do it, or I'm not supposed to do that right then. But I've also been in situations where I've actually died to that and said, that's not what I want. What I want is the way of Jesus. And then it doesn't matter. Like, the more someone can keep getting angrier and angrier, and I just get calmer and calmer.
Yeah.
And I just get more at peace. I start to see things more clearly. I start to have more compassion. I start to be able to see, okay, you're saying a lot of ridiculous things, but I also see some hurt in there, and I can actually speak into that.
Yeah.
You know, all those different things, like the demeanor changes. So that's a, that, I feel like I, we should have been recording it before the podcast. Because that was like a, but how would you clarify what I said there?
No, I think what's so important in what you said is there's momentum in both scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
In both scenarios, I am building in momentum in one direction or another, and in one of them, I'm building more and more momentum in my desire to unleash justice, right? To put you in your place, to correct you, to say all the things I'm feeling, to make sure you know how I feel so that you can feel corrected and you can mend your errant ways. Versus the other one, what you're describing and what we have both experienced in moments is the momentum building the other way. Like you're not being fanciful. Like you're being serious when you say you can get to a place where the more that person is throwing at you, the more calm you feel. Like all of a sudden you see their pain and you feel compassion rather than anger. You hear their confusion and your desire is to help rather than to correct and put them in their place. And sometimes you can even see, not in a condescending way, but you can kind of see the ridiculousness of, oh my goodness, why would I let this get me so riled up? And then that momentum builds and builds and builds toward peace. But we don't ever get there if we don't start from that decision point of what do I truly desire in this? Because in that first scenario where I'm trying to stifle down, you know, the angry response, that's because what I really want is to express my anger. I desire to correct you and put you in your place. And so I'm having to work really, really hard to try to suppress what I actually want. That is revealing something really significant about my heart. Like my desire mm-hmm. is to unleash this anger. And so it's taking all of this willpower to not do what I really want to do. Versus if you flip that upside down, and what I truly desire is peace, is grace, then when the angry thought surfaces, it's like, I don't have, it doesn't make sense. I don't have space for that. Like, right. Like what I want, what I desire is this other thing. I think that might feel inaccessible to some people.
Yeah. Well, that's the supernatural part. That's the putting to death and the resurrection. Because if you say that feels out of reach, like how do you just stop wanting this thing and wanting the other thing? Well, right. You must be born again.
Right.
That's why there's no simpler, there's no seven steps to that. Now,
why a teeny bit of the cross will never get you there.
Right.
It is only total surrender to that you can even begin to start thinking that's a reasonable hope.
Because wounding your sin doesn't work. Like it's just a flesh wound.
Yeah. My sin can take a shot.
It can take such a shot. It's like a zombie in those minutes. Like you cannot, and we just get fooled into thinking like those controlling, those biting the tongue and everything, those are all our attempts to control and tame our sin, our refusal, and part of that is because we think, well, what do we think in that situation? Well, if I put to death this desire to put that person in their place, well, then aren't I giving into the injustice of it? Aren't I condoning what they're doing? Aren't I like, you know, encouraging them in that? Like somebody needs to tell them. But that's not ours. That's God's. And when that correction is to take place, it is to take place in the empowered spirit-led life where you love the person and care for them. Mm. And you are wanting to protect them from their own sinful desires. Yeah. That's a very different thing than wanting to put somebody in their place. And so you have to confront that and say, no, that's wrong. I need to put that, to death. And I need to live to this other thing. That's the miracle. That's the work of the Holy Spirit. I think God in his kindness, though, gives us worldly examples that everyone has experienced. of what we're talking about here, I was just thinking about, you know, I think most people have had the experience of a vacation going wrong. Like a vacation is not working out the way that you picture, sitting on the beach in perfect weather and, you know, sipping on a drink while your children are playing, you know, building a sandcastle, and you get to read a book and everything. But then you get there and there's 40 mile an hour winds, or you can't find a parking spot at the beach, and then your kids, you know, are fighting with each other, and then the sand comes up and like gets sand all over the snacks that you're having, and you're like all this stuff. I feel like I'm speaking from experience right now.
I've just gone to Florida.
It does feel very real. But all of us have this experience with it, and we all have the experience of like the first or the second thing that goes wrong, it being really upsetting and really like, no, this can't happen. Like this needs to look this way. And then there comes a point where it becomes almost comical. I think we've all had the experiences where everything has gone wrong to the point where now it's just funny.
Yeah.
And now you're like, you no longer are trying to control the situation. You're no longer trying to like make it perfect. Now, like everything that happens is just, it's just funny, and it just is adding to the story of like what you're going to be able to tell. Like, oh my gosh, then can you believe that this happened? Then that guy came up to you and said, it's a little glimmer. It's a little glimpse. But when we talk about that momentum going in a certain direction, once like what's happening there in that weird vacation illustration is you've let go of something.
Yes.
You've let go of this idea of this is what's supposed to happen, and you're embracing now the momentum of what's going on, and now you're immune to all of these things. And in a much more powerful way, this is what happens, like a more powerful and transformative way. This is what happens when you let go of this, like, okay, my desire should not be to want to see this person be put in their place or to see them corrected and all of these things. That's not my desire. I want to put that to death. It is no longer who I am. I don't want that. I want the things of Christ. And then that momentum carries over, because now you start to see all these opportunities to display. How do you display the grace of Christ except for in hard situations?
Right.
Like nobody looks at the, let's say you go to a restaurant and everything's perfect. The server does everything right and the food is perfect. And you think the cook for it, no one looks at you and says, wow, look at all the grace in that person. We're like, wow, that's
extraordinary person.
Right. What an extraordinary, like, look at the mercy and the compassion. They thanked the chef for that perfect meal. Yeah. No, I mean, like, sure, kind, you know, and grateful, like you might say those kinds of things. But then you start to see, man, when you get in those opportunities, that's where you have this big platform to be able to display this supernatural, otherworldly, life of Jesus, which is what you see in the early church.
Yeah.
You see them living in the midst of all these circumstances, and how Paul is content in all circumstances. None of those things affect him, because it's not the thing.
Yeah.
The thing is pursuing Christ. And so I hope, like, I don't know if you can think of other situations. I mean, I'm just thinking of the personal conflict. I think about it with my children, you know, when they do something that's irritating to me, like, am I just like tempering my frustration, or am I actually saying, no, this isn't, I want to put that to death, because, and then I might be left with, okay, I really do want to help them in this area. Which by the way, that does show just putting something to death. We're talking about the desires. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean all the things that you are doing will not continue to be done.
Right.
So for example, if I idolize my family and so I spend all this time with them because I kind of place my identity in them and the success of my kids or the success, you know, of my, you know, in these different things with them, that to die to that is not to then say, okay, well now I no longer parent my children. Like, so I no longer correct them. I no longer teach them. I no longer, because I'm dying to all of those. No, it's, you're dying to those desires of wanting to, basically wanting to be God,
right,
or wanting to use them to your ends, you know,
that they meet my every specific expectation,
right,
that they fulfill my desires for affirmation and respect and those things. Those are the things that I'm dying to, which then actually makes me a better father to them, a more engaged, a more involved father, because I no longer am subconsciously using them as some sort of tool to accomplish my own ends, but can actually love them where they are, can be patient with them where they are, rather than frustrated that they're not where I think they should be. Like, not only am I not disengaged from them as a result of that, I am further more deeply, more compassionately engaged.
Right. Like, which one does your, if you know, if you have children or anybody, do they respond better to, does a person respond better to correction or to considering other ways when we are sarcastic and patronizing and angry, mm-hmm. or when we actually are seeking to understand and actually connect with them and show them that we're on their side in this, and yeah. then point them to something better? I mean, obviously but in the moment we struggle in that.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm saying, in the moment, to confront that sin and to die to it, to call it what it is, to recognize, like, these are sinful fleshly desires in me, and I need to die of those and surrender all of this, and then live to Christ. And it may be then that you actually still communicate, like, that's that. It's out of that we can confront sin in a loving way. It's out of that we can point people to something better and share the gospel, or just encourage people and challenge people and do all those things. But it's in the spirit of Christ. It's in this new life rather than my old self.
And that's something that we really need one another's help in order to do, because we can talk about these things on a 30,000 foot level. We can give some practical examples, but it's so easy to say, well, yeah, but that's not my situation, so I don't know how to do that in my specific situation. And that's where we remind each other that all this needs to be happening in community, because there isn't one simple formula that just walk through these steps and you're walking the crucified life. It's as we are pursuing Jesus together, we are helping one another to do this. As you and I are sitting down and having a discussion about how we're parenting our kids, then we're helping one another say, hey, you know, that was really awesome. I'm glad that, you know, you're seeing fruit in that. Maybe think about this way that you responded, or asking one another for help in those things. We need one another. And so if we can help you in that, please don't hesitate to ask, as you're praying through and thinking through what are the areas where you're still clinging on to something that is not resurrection life, or if there are aspects of your life where you say, yeah, I really just have been wanting a little dose of Jesus here, but I really don't want his interference in this in a significant way. We are here to help you pray through those things, process those things, and together work through what does it practically look like to put those things to death, to surrender to Christ, and be able to experience the fullness of his life and his love. So please reach out to us. You can catch us right now at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. You can grab one of us on a Sunday morning. You can accost us in Walmart and ask us your spiritual questions. We love that. We love to help. We love to connect with you. And in the meantime, grace and peace to you.